Yo, 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 what is up? And welcome everyone to my first live on Instagram in like forever. I am wanting to get on here and touch base on what is going to be going down for semifinals from my perspective. Clearly, I've got some amazing athletes that are going to be thrown down in the West. This is week one. It's about to kick off in a matter of hours for Europe. And I wanted to give some of my thoughts and feedback on some of the programming that we see as the test at large. I'm not going to dive into too much detail, but I am going to kind of give some opinions and who I think it favors, particularly. Specifically, I'll give some predictions for week one here, and then I will be out of the prediction game for week two and week three, because I will be the one that is present in North America West and North America East doing some color commentary. So covering the athletes and keeping everybody in the loop of exactly what's going on and how it's happening on the floor. And then also doing the Friday coverage, which I'm really excited about. It'll be podcast style. I know that there's been a lot of curiosities about what is going to happen from a coverage perspective when it comes to the broadcast. So will we have, video? What will it look like? Will we have commentary or voiceover? What will it seem like? You know, if you guys can remember last year when Chase Ingram had the great idea of just kind of scrumming up a group of folks with iPhones and weak internet connections and the willingness of spirit, we made it happen. But it was very much a ragtag group of folks who just wanted to serve the community with very little planning. And our ability to execute was a little bit on the low side. This year, I think we can have much greater expectations because we were able to plan for it. Day one is going to be called the semifinal kickoff show. Chase Ingram is going to go live in about 12 hours from now, my time. So it'll be a little bit late at night there on day one in Europe. So he's going to cover it with a range of guests that's going to be awesome and allow people to have a streaming experience and get some coverage. But it's going to be chill. It's going to be laid back. It's going to be a lot like this live where if I was joined by a guest like Josh Bridges or Jason Kalipa or someone like that, we'd be chilling, watching the event go down, talking about what we see, talking about what we might do, and all the other intricacies and things going on around the community. We will have an ability to interact with the community as well. So people that are watching it, we're going to have access to the live stream chat and be able to have some interaction. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be awesome. Today, I'm going to start by jumping in and going over a little bit of my thoughts on some of these workouts that we're going to see take place over the next 3 weeks. I haven't really given a ton of opinion, but I wanted to start by going over the team workouts. I really like these as a test. If many of you know and followed my journey personally, I've been to the CrossFit Games 5 times, and 3 of those times I was on a team, and 3 of those times we won the Affiliate Cup. So we were the fittest affiliate and or team in the world. So I've got a lot of experience competing with other people side by side, competing against folks head to head, and all the different ways that we can test a team event is very diverse. What I really appreciate about what CrossFit has done this year in regards to their programming is that they've laid a foundation of ways to test the teams in a diverse layout, meaning that individuals get an opportunity to shine, meaning that teams get an opportunity to do work any way they see fit. And that I think it puts an equal opportunity to let us tell a story from a commentator perspective on what's happening out there on the floor and the overall layout, which are things about workouts that I tend to, of course, prefer now that I'm in this seat that I'm in now in regards to being able to get out there and do some of the broadcasting and kind of tell the story behind what's happening on the floor and potentially the whys behind what we see. But event one is going to be a doozy. So the way that it's laid out is, of course, Friday, we're going to get 3 team events in one day. There's been a conversation where it's like, hey, are 5 tests enough? Is volume important in team training anymore? Is it lacking anything? In my opinion, personally, is that this actually puts more of an onus on the importance of volume and the way that you balance it in your training. Because while 5 tests aren't a tremendous amount of volume throughout the scope of a weekend, 3 events, and especially the way that they're going to shake out here on day one, from a metabolic standpoint, from an overall fatigue standpoint, and from maximum speed and maximum velocity of a contraction standpoint, I think it's still extremely important. So there are a lot of people like, oh man, I've been training 2 and 3 hours a day for no reason, or 4 hours a day, or whatever it is. No, that's going to have a significant impact on the latter event in day 5 and day 2. And even though it's only 2 days, day one is action packed. And there is no way that you can consider your team a team that is fighting for a spot at the CrossFit Games if you don't have the capacity to actually go all out in each and every one of those tests. So nonetheless, test one kicks off. It's going to be a doozy. And it starts with 30 rope climbs right out of the gate. It's 15 feet. From what I understand, you are going to be able to tag off teammates and rotate through. But the better question here, and the thing that to digest as we is from an analyst perspective, when I take a look at workouts like this, even from a coaching perspective, is it's not about climbing the rope. It's about how you climb the rope and how you descend from the rope. And that might sound silly, but these key aspects and key things are huge considerations when you look at the large volume of 30 rope climbs split up amongst four people. The questions that we're going to have teams that have to answer, and I'm sure they've already answered at this point, how they'll strategize this. Well, at least from week one, you see week two and week three in the East and the West and Australia and different places that have yet to go this week. They are going to have an opportunity to watch it take place on the floor. They're going to get to see the floor layout. They're going to get to see the speed of the transitions and what happens. So they have an advantage to playing the game a little bit differently. But when we look here, 30 rope climbs, you know, can you get up in with a high jump in one pinch? Or one clasp of the rope with your feet? Because if you have that type of athleticism and prowess and capacity to do it consistently, rep in and rep out, you can create in your team quite a big advantage through the course of 30 rep climbs. If your women can contribute to the rope climbs and climb just as fast as your men, that will also be something that sets teams apart early to give them a buffer into the handstand pushups. But for me personally, this is where the rubber meets the road in this workout. Oh, by the way, every time that someone taps out, you know, they have to go take someone else's place under the worm. So we're already getting this effect, which I love too, from a programming perspective, that we get these aspects of last year. If you guys watched semifinals last year, teammates had to accumulate double unders while their team member held a sandbag in a bear hug carry position. Devastating, right? The teams that rotated through and had men on the bag last, it showed very much. People were failing the hold with the sandbag. People are shaking and undulating like crazy. But I think we're going to see elements of that as teams bear under the load of this worm. And I think, again, there's residual fatigue that will build and affect tests later in the next 2 days. So 30 rope climbs got to be done. Everybody else is chilling under the worm while you climb rope. 120 wall facing handstand pushups. Now, I like this. You know, to me, this is a relatively still high demand when it comes to capacity from a team perspective. And I think this is a great opportunity for teams to set themselves apart. Again, I keep mentioning women, but in my 3 years of winning the Affiliate Cup, women are what set our teams apart. Hey, we had some fit dudes. I got to go shoulder to shoulder and toe to toe with some fit men that were mentally tough, that we did our thing. You know, several of my teammates, including myself, have been to the CrossFit Games individuals on the men's side. However, the women, specifically in 2017, 2012, and 2013 that I got to rock with, were the reason that our team were set apart. And that's what we're going to see here as we watch the teams venture into the 120 strict handstand pushups wall facing, is because they're going to have a chance to utilize their female counterparts, the men will, and some of these women are going to be able to knock out bigger rep schemes than other teams' men's. And I'm talking at the elite level, the top three that are going to be punching their ticket in the big three of the semifinals, even the big four when we group in Australia with North America West, North America East, as well as Europe. So that's a big differentiator. Now, after the 120 wall-facing handstand pushups, this is where the workout will become more suffering limited. And I say that because you've already now been holding the worm for several minutes and everybody's got to contribute to biking 150 calories on the echo. Now, logic is simple here. Mass moves mass. Mass creates power. Men are typically bigger bodies, longer in frame, and heavier in body weight than the women. From what I know, and I could be wrong, there's probably going to be one bike per team. If you got to spend a lot of time messing with the seat, if your men have to bike really low because you got a short female, all these things are going to not contribute to maximizing your score. The men got to carry a lot of weight here for teams that want to go fast. You got to get some good burst and surge on the bike to give your team an advantage or create separation there, particularly for teams that struggled on the strict handstand pushups. So after they come off those 120 reps, they're going to get a chance to sit down for 150 cals on the bike. Men will likely contribute more than the women. And of course, that's just the way the game goes. And then everyone gets to put the worm down and handstand walk 48 feet to the finish. And everybody got to contribute in that way. I like that. because it is an everybody's contribution type thing towards the end, and fatigue is certainly built as we go. So that's kind of my take there on workout one. As we continue forward here, workout two is something that everyone will remember from a couple years ago. It's 3 cleans, 2 front squats, and 1 jerk. I like this as a test. I think, of course, there's a time and a place for it because it's a complex. You know, it seems like at large, a lot of our community had been getting bored with maxes that are single rep. Hey, last year at the CrossFit Games, people were like, yo, they got 2 attempts for a clean and jerk and a snatch. Okay. Well, now we're at a point in the season where we're already going to be through 3 stages, the open, the quarters, and the semis. And we have yet to see a pure 1 rep max. And I love it. And I think that you guys hopefully are fans of this. I love to watch the complex go down. I think there's greater time under tension. It increases the need for self-awareness and gamification. So as an analyst, I love to watch the athletes either overshoot their capacity gravely, where they're like, yo, if my 1 rep max is this, then I should be able to smoke this complex at this. Or they misinterpret the way that the fatigue has affected them coming off of an event like event one. So that's also something to consider, is now building off of what they have. And we know the teams at the top, they train pretty much for full time. It's going to be a great test. I think we're going to see some heavy weights. We will see some all-time world records. I don't know that that'll take place this week in Europe, or in Africa, but I do believe that we're going to see some previous all-time best set here in America and in North America West and North America East when it comes to the team side of things. So that's going to be a great one to watch. Very exciting. It'll be a great one to have people in the booth. I'm sure Chase is going to have a blast with that this Friday, just chilling. I know I'm looking forward to it, to have someone in the booth, to be sitting there, to be talking, to be going back and forth with you guys as spectators, especially through this one, as it's a little bit more slow goings and the action is a little bit more set apart. Then the way that teams are going to finish day one is one of the most brutal tests that I've seen in a while on the team side. And I'm just going to be honest about the way it plays out, is 800 meter run, everybody runs, and 15 worm thrusters. Now, it's not about, the question isn't here like, hey, are you going unbroken on the thrusters? That's not the question. The question is, how will you break them if you need to in regards to the rest? So, you know, what we see historically with thrusters is a movement where 15 in a row without stopping or pausing becomes very difficult, especially knowing that you got to run. This is a running event. You got to run, and you got to put your best foot forward in regards to pacing and really pacing around the weakest runner on your team. I'm going to tell you all right now that when you see an event like this, that you have to lean on someone who is the weakest runner, there's a lot of pressure on that person. Will they crack? Will they rise to the occasion? Will they run faster than they shouldn't and crumple the team on the worm? I mean, good night. Like, it's funny. I saw James Hobart make a point the other day about, you know, why are we still showing teams and everything, man? This is an event that I'd love to cover for team. And I'm fortunately going to get to do it. And I think we're doing it in the right way, the right scope. So the nerds, the geeks, you guys get to tune into the semifinal kickoff show and hang out with Chase, hang out with me through the next few weeks. But we get to talk about exactly what's going on. We're going to cover the final heat just like it was the real deal. Just like we will with full coverage on Saturday and Sunday. But this is going to be an exciting race. I mean, there's going to be some teams that get blown out of the water, no doubt. But does that make it less interesting? To me, absolutely not. And here's why. I love watching the teams that are bringing in the tail end on a run, and they're suffering so much, and then they get under the bag, and then you see someone just fall out from under the bag, and then the bag folds on the other three, and then it gets whipped around, and someone gets cracked in the chest with a worm that slides around and flips. Like, this is my favorite part about sport, specifically team sport. It's like people start cursing each other out on the floor. People get frustrated. People throw their belts. People throw their knee sleeves, right? It's all up in arms. And I love it because communication and camaraderie is such a big point and aspect of this side of things. I just think it's so reflective of many other things in life. And I can't wait to watch this event go down. This is certainly a running one. But you get that unique combination of the suffering that's going to take place with the worm. Time cap 30 minutes. It's going to be a grind. There ain't no doubt about it. Event 4 for the teams is going to be an awesome one, where they go male, female pairs, 3 rounds of 30 calorie row, 30 overhead squats. And then the other pair gets to do 90 calorie row, 90 overhead squats, 1 round. So it's kind of like you get to pick, right? Do you want to go repetitive cyclical efforts of 30-30, or do you want to go chipper style 90-90? And under the assumption of looking at the workout as prescribed, it's 185 pounds for the men and 125 for the women. There will be some people who get absolutely obliterated by this load for this kind of volume. If everybody's doing synchro work, which it doesn't say synchro, so we can be under the assumption that you got to get the work done anyhow. That means, if me and my female counterpart are sitting down on the rower, I might be able to row 20. She can row 10. Maybe then she hops up or I hop up and get 10, 15 of the overhead squats, but I stop whenever I start to slow or start to wobble, and then she can pick up the slack and carry the rest. And this is the way that I would approach it. I mean, I'm not trying to give too many teams too many advantageous points here, because I'm not coaching any teams this year that are competing, but I'm going to tell you this. If I was out there, I'd understand that 125, if I'm competing with a female that's the same fitness level as me, 185 for me feels a little heavier than 125 typically does for her. And this is just commonly associated with the way that reps and weights are scaled for the female sex. If it is a rep range, or if it is a load that is sub 70 to 75% of a one rep max, let's say sub maximal, and for men it's the same, pound for pound, women typically cycle those loads faster and finish workouts faster. Now, when it gets closer to lower reps and 1RMs, men and women tend to have that bigger discrepancy, that 100% of a male's lift might be purely 70% or so of a female's lift on average. Of course, we're just using averages. But from a cyclical rate, from a Metcon perspective, man, we might be able to start pushing up that number a little bit, because we're seeing it in the data. At least I'm seeing it in the True Fitness training cadre that I have, and the way that women handle 65 pounds for a thrust of the versus men at 95 pounds, or 135 pounds in overhead squat versus 95 pounds. Like, we're starting to see that in the space. So it's always something that I'm very interested in from a nerd and geek out perspective. When I look at stuff like this. So these are all things that I like to be mindful of as I'm looking at the test. I really like the way that it's scripted and worked out. I think we're going to see some devastating things happen on the floor in regards to, you know, communication and people blowing up and people failing overhead squats, because this is not a slow paced workout. If you want to do well and do big things, like give your team an opportunity to qualify for the CrossFit Games, this is where you're going to see some stuff start to go down. And of course, this is workout one a day two for the team. So this is going to get full coverage. We'll be sitting down, we'll be doing the thing behind the mic and there in the broadcast booth as a team. So it will be less casually covered and more formally covered. And then the final event, you know, test five, four rounds for time, five synchro muscle ups, pair one, five synchro muscle ups, pair two. 10 worm clean and jerks, 15 synchro burpees over the worm, and then one section of the worm walking lunges. Now, I'm assuming clearly the walking lunges with the worm will be on the shoulder, but you know, the general information that's given out here with the five synchro muscle ups, pair one, five synchro muscle ups, pair two. Was that ring? Is it bar? Is it ring and bar? Is it someone on ring, someone on bars? 10 worm clean and jerks, devastating. Are we going to see ignorant teams try to go touch and go? Yes, we will, because we always do. And I can't wait to talk about it. And then 15 synchro burpees over the worm. Right now, here's what I want to lean in and say. Look, is it wrong to do touch and go worm, clean and jerks? The answer is yes, it is wrong. But is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. So can you do it? Sure. Should you do it? No. Historically, everything tells us no, that you shouldn't do it. We covered events last year in the East. I specifically covered the teams in North America East. And it was like, cool, teams that were fit were doing touch and go reps. And then guess what? They finished terribly compared to where they would have finished had they just done singles. Now, here's what I'll say also. Through my experience in 2017, long time ago. You see all these grays in my beard? They weren't there in 2017. But in 2017, when we went team, we had won, I think, every event, maybe going into the final at the Super South semifinal. And you know, we knew we were going to CrossFit Games for sure. We knew we wanted to win the CrossFit Games for sure. Like, that was our intent all the way from the beginning. But what we did is we went out on the final and it had clean and jerks, and we were like, hey, we're going to do these clean and jerks touch and go. And that decision was because we had never actually done it before, and because we wanted to challenge ourselves and see, could we learn on the fly? What if they program this to CrossFit Games touch and go? What if, you know, like, let's see what we're made of. Let's see how we adapt to this. And I'm gonna tell you right now, the ish hit the fan, folks. The worm was all over the place. We weren't synchronized. Now, we had a good few reps to start. We got no reps. It was terrible, and it was awesome at the same time, because we learned, we adapted as the workout went on. We were still able to navigate and make up some ground on ground we lost early from making that choice, but we did it intentionally to put our backs to the wall to learn. You see, on team and on individual, in our sport specifically, there are only a small handful of opportunities that you have with a live judge beside you who's a stranger, who may or may not have any idea what they're looking for, maybe calling no reps when they're good reps, maybe calling good reps when they're no reps. But you got to learn how to show them what they want to see, and you got to figure that out on the fly. That was something that we wanted to practice as a team. That's something I encourage my athletes to do when they have the opportunity and they're on site in live person competition. But Nonetheless, I love this test as a final. I think it's going to be much more difficult than teams assume. I think that it's going to become very much a race through transitions. There's a lot of transitions here, and the teams at the top have to be hustling and moving from the pairing on the muscle-ups to the worm, to the way they advance the worm. You know, teams have to make strong considerations for the way the worm hits the ground when they drop it. Where is it at in the lane? If you pick it up, is your foot out of bounds? Will the lunges count if your knee or your toe or your foot? Like, all these details are things that often teams don't consider in training and practice, and then it nips them in the butt on the competition floor. And it's always something great to cover and commentate on, because a lot of times you guys at home, you might not have any idea why this team is getting asked to move back a section, but it's like, those are the details that hopefully they have trained and prepared for, and now they're on their way to something greater. So nonetheless, the team events look awesome. Can't wait to do it. Let's jump into these individual events, because we know that's where a lot of the real excitement is happening, and that's where a lot of the spectatorship is happening. Now, I want to say again, individual event number one is taking place on Friday, and that's going to be during the kickoff show, right? The semifinal kickoff show. Chase will cover it in Europe. I'm going to get a chance to cover it in North America West and then North America East in week three. And the other semifinals are going to have their own production ways for people to tune in. At least that's from what I'm aware of. That's what's going to take place. But I know Europe, NA West and NA East are going to have coverage there. It will be us tuning in, chopping it up as these athletes take heart in test one, which is going to be 5 rounds for time, 800 meter run and 10 clean and jerks at 185 and 125. Devastating, right? To me, this is a great way to kick off the weekend. Now, there have been some things that have been said about the programming already, and people are like, yo, you really got to sell out on this because it's the only one event on day one. Duh. 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 If there were 3 other events on day one, guess what you would have to do? Sell out on event one. Because in case you haven't paid attention, there are a limited and finite amount of spots, and you're now competing against the 40 fittest men and women in your particular area and in your particular region. The field has shrunk. That means the ability to bounce around from place to place and shuffle to shuffle does not exist if you want to go to the CrossFit Games. So not only does that opinion seem amateur, but that take at large seems just kind of ignorant, right? Like, when athletes take the floor through the semifinal with only 6 tests in 3 days, and some of these people are only competing for 8 spots, 9 spots, 2 spots, right? Every point counts. There was no way people were going to come out and be like, yeah, I got to save my legs a little bit for the next event. Yo, if you do that and then you miss out on 5 points or 10 points, good luck showing your stuff on the next event too. And that ain't how you can play the sport anymore. So event one, 5 rounds for time, 800 meter run, 10 clean and jerks. Are people going to go touch and go? No, they're not, because it's a running workout. And if in the time that you make up on just increasing your running pace on the barbell, or I'm sorry, on the runs while you're out there for that 800, makes no sense for you to waste the energy that it will make up for you doing touch and go. Will we see it? Probably. I hope so, just so we can talk about how dumb it is. But we're here. And this is going to be a running event. I think it will have to be at high intensity. We're going to see some people move at a clip. Do I think we'll see sub 20 runs? I don't know. Look, here's the deal. CrossFit has already made it obvious. We're already in the know that the distance is set for these 800 meter runs. I mean, we're starting to see some courses be released now. You know, people are posting it to their Instagram. In Africa, it looks a little strange. They're going to be in like this circle for the clean and jerks. Like, it's going to be what it's going to be. But the distances are going to be slightly different from region to region. So we're going to have to understand that times will differ and our conversations might differ. Nonetheless, the same caliber and same capacity of athlete will reign on top and will have the same placing. What matters is what happens on the competition floor where you're at. So I love this as test one. I think it's an amazing program and way to start the weekend. I think it's long, it's a grinder, but it's traditional CrossFit. We got a great couplet right here with a monostructural and a barbell movement. Some of my favorite. Then on day two, these athletes are going to get full coverage here. This will be Saturday and Sunday for the individuals. They're going to go back to back for 2 events, though. So remember, day one is only one event. Day two, 2 events. And this one's 5 rounds for time, 100 double unders, 20 toes to bar, and 10 front squats. The front squats are at 225 for the men and 155 for the women. Now, when I look at this layout, this is a devastating workout. Thank God for these athletes that there's going to be some floor layout that kind of, in my opinion, diminishes a bit of the intensity. This was something that I always considered as a competitor, is that when you take the floor in you know, in Carson or in Europe or wherever these athletes are, typically the layout gives you some brevity and space to breathe and move through transitions. Typically when we train in the gym, you guys that are trained at affiliates, you got this little square you got to stay in because you're in a class. And that really forces you to create these opportunities to rest, but not also create an opportunity to waste time, because the temptation is if you put your hands on your knees, you stay there too long. And if you do that in a 5-round workout for 4 seconds too long, that's 20 seconds in your workout. And now you can't go to the CrossFit Games. You're not working the semifinals. You get the idea. So the intensity changes. And I think, you know, from a floor layout perspective, we can expect that the bar advances perhaps down the floor. And if they do that, they get to walk and roll and push their bar and then walk back. And they're going to either competitors side to side or they're going to be running. What are they going to do? But those transitions are things that I always looked forward to on the big stage, because I felt like I got a little reprieve from my suffering. It felt so different than being in a gym. So that's something to watch for. I think most athletes are going to be going unbroken that go to the CrossFit Games in this workout. They're going to have to focus on movement quality and movement efficiency. You know, here's what I like is that it's simple, right? A front squat is one of the 9 foundational movements that we teach at the level 1. It is a huge, huge limiter with where you're going to go and take the sport of CrossFit. And even from a fitness journey, lifestyle journey, folks, if you can't front squat, if you don't like front squatting, if you don't put your best effort with front squatting, there goes your thruster. There goes your squat clean. There goes your front rack walking lunge, right? There are so many things that will limit us, and it builds such great capacity for upper body health and movement that, man, it's just a valuable movement. So learn a front squat, do it better. People are going to go unbroken. The double unders will play a role in this. I think that coming off of yesterday's running, most of the top end athletes that are doing this full time, they won't be as affected, but you never know. You really never know what happens. There's a good amount of jumping and ballistic contractions through the lower leg through this whole weekend. So we'll see it start to add up. 20 toes to bar. I think that you can break that up and still end up with a great time. I think that that's a trap on your grip and the fatigue that it builds there. I think that 20 toes to bar are something that you could break up into 3 different sets and do it very quickly and literally account for about 3 to 4 seconds of a short rest for your grip and a little reprieve from your hip flexors in midline and shoulders that could add up for you on double unders and add up for you on front squats. But this one's going to be great. You're going to get a lot of that side to side looking. This is, you know, even though it's 5 rounds for time of a triplet, it has a chipper feel to it. And I'm sure we'll see that as we start to see the way the athletes navigate the floor for this. But that's going to be workout 1 of day 2. And then workout 2 of day 2 is, man, we're getting, I've been watching Planet of the Apes with our kids because we want to take them to see the new one. So I had to, of course, get them caught up to speed and watch the first 3. And, you know, this is like, I want to call this workout Caesar or something cool like that, just because it's 5 rounds for time or 7 rounds for time, 10 calorie echo bike, 1 legless rope climb. That means they got to go 15 feet, touch the beam, come on back down, 10 box jump overs, 30 inches for the men, 24 for the women. And then they got to do another legless rope climb. Now for 7 rounds, you're going to climb that thing legless for 14 repetitions. Historically, we've seen workouts where we climb, do 10 legless rope climbs with a run. That was one that was a very popular. Shout out to Elijah Muhammad, who just is an absolute legend for the way that he attacked that in 2014. I mean, literally, it was just amazing. He like jumped and I feel like he grabbed onto the rope at about 11 feet, made 1 or 2 pulls with his hands and then slapped the top of the rung like he was dunking a basketball every time. So go back and watch that footage. Go back in the library, get in a bag, go nerd out, go watch Easy, do the 2014 legless rope climb event and it'll get you hype. And it's going to be a bit of a different energy for this though, right? So the 7 rounds for time, people are going to have to meet themselves where they're at. This is the biggest trap of the weekend to me. In regards to, there will be some athletes who know their capacity and know they can hit a home run, right? And if they're doing so and they try so desperately to win, get first or second, it could drop them to 10th to 12th. And that could devastate a lot of weekends for people. Then there will equally be a cohort of athletes, the mid-pack of athletes in my consideration, that will look at this workout and be like, man, I'm kind of good at legless rope climbs, but I really got to be patient. I got to pace. And they'll pace it accordingly and nail it for themselves, which means that they'll actually overachieve for where their capacity is. But because they paced it right, they can overachieve on the scoring. So this is, for an example, someone in a field might have 20th place ability on this workout and they get like 12th, but it's because everybody else or 8 or 6 of the other competitors tried so hard and tirelessly to maximize those rope climbs and take risk that it bumped them several places down. So this athlete who paced it just right with less ability, they nailed it, and now they're going to reap the reward of the points. And then, of course, there are athletes on the other side of the coin as well that don't have the capacity and are so desperate in their mind to get points that they don't have the good rope climbing capacity, and they're still going to try to go fast, and then they're just standing around a lot and looking at the top, watching everybody else climb around them. Now, how much do the echo bike and the box jump overs matter in this test? They matter, but they're really significant for the people who can go fast. Those people who consider themselves apes, they got the strong grip, they've got strong pulling stamina. They're going to the CrossFit Games. They're top eight or top six in every semi. Boy, those things matter. And how you pace the bike, are you going to use your hands? Does it save your grip if you just pedal only with your legs? How fast do you want the box jump overs to happen? There will be some people who can grip it and rip it. There's no doubt about it, but it's not going to be the majority of the fields, in my opinion. Let's advance forward. Now, this will be the final, that was the final workout for day two right there. And now we start day three like this. And here's the beauty of all this programming, team. This is it. One event on day one, two events on day two, three events on day three. It will be unlike anything that we've ever seen in regards to shuffling. There will be people who are completely oblivious that they can still go to the CrossFit Games more than halfway through the weekend. And I love that. I think it's going to make it very exciting to call. It's going to make it very exciting to watch. Sunday, you got to tune in. You have to be there to watch this live in every semi. How could you not want to? The whole field could be turned on its head because half the points, 300 points, are available going into the final day. And this is a row handstand walk event. Now, I was very surprised that this was the level of upside down skill capacity that's being tested at the semifinal. Last year, we had pirouettes upside down, and we had wall facing handstand pushups, and we had the seated legless rope climbs all in one test with overhead squats. I mean, talk about a well-rounded test that was very high-level CrossFit. We don't get a lot of that at all this year. It's a very different flavor. And I don't know the intricacy of this, but it's got Dave Castro written all over it, right? Like these whole tests. It's like this is that era of between 2011 through, 2017 regionals. This is where it's like, yo, You need to bring your lunch pail and a hard hat because we're about to go to work. And if you don't have a baseline of metabolic conditioning and a little bit of grit and moxie and tenacity about you, you ain't going to the CrossFit Games to show us all those cute, sexy skills that you think are CrossFit, because that's advanced and that is cool and that is CrossFit. But you got to first show us what you got. Show us what you got and fight tooth and nail in order to earn it to show us down the road. These Wonder Maxes that everybody's complaining that ain't present, show us some fitness. Kill this row in this handstand walk workout. See, I get distracted because I like to riff and rant. Forgive me. For time, 400 meter row, 96 foot handstand walk, 600 meter row, 120 foot handstand walk, 800 meter row, 72 foot handstand walk, 13 minute cap. Now, clearly, the rows get longer each one by 200 meters. Now, the question is how important is it to row a blistering pace? I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know if it suits everybody to be reckless early. But I'm going to tell you this. If you start your 400 meter row and that 96 foot handstand walk too slow at all, see ya. Like everybody else leaving you in the dust. Because there's going to be people in every heat who just nail the pacing for themselves, and they're not coming down off their hands. Right. Now, it's not like we can just, this isn't a low volume of handstand walking. And there are going to be some people that wow us like it's their job. Tudor Magda, out of the, Tudor in the West? I think Tudor's in the West. He walks on his hands like it's kind of me speed walking on my feet. Like he might be me when I'm walking fast on my feet. Daniel Brandon in the East, duh. I'm excited to see how Tia does at this because, and I'm speaking on, I apologize for this, but I'm speaking on specifically on some of the events that I'm going to be covering because those are the athletes that I'm paying more closely attention to. But Tia historically gets into a relatively poor, look, she's the fittest woman in history, first of all. I shouldn't need to say that. But her handstand walking speed and execution there is lacking sometimes in comparison to the field. But also I covered the Rogue Invitational this last year. Her handstand walking looked pretty dang good coming off that pregnancy. She had much more of a neutral head position than I previously saw before. And that could favor her in something like this. You don't really need to see your hand placement out in front of you. Athletes who are proficient in regards to not waiting, that overarch position, chin up, like creating that stress on their cervical spine and their shoulder girdle, they're going to have much more an efficient time walking fast and saving energy. So anyways, this is going to be an exciting one to watch. I think that it also could be a trap in regards to intensity. But gosh, at this skill level, the things that we saw athletes do at the semifinal level, I'm excited to see actually what kind of row paces, more than anything, that they come out and try to hold with the handstand walking. But again, it's simple, it's elegant. I think every affiliate has a handful and then some of athletes who would love to give this a go. And that's one of the beautiful things that we'll get to talk about throughout the course of this weekend, because the programming is that, man, we could be doing it out there in the community. It's going to take very little scaling, maybe some load, maybe some gymnastics volume on that legless rope climber, the 20 toes to bar each round of the, you know, the workout number two. But for the most part, we can give this a go. The second workout of day three. So now there's only 200 points left. Now we're going to go a little heavy, but we got to do it by earning your right to go heavy. So it's the squat snatch ladder. For time, 10 squat snatches, then 8 squat snatches, 6 squat snatches, 4 squat snatches, and 2 squat snatches. I like this event. This is a repeat of a regional event that we did in 2016. I was out there. I did it myself. And I like this test. You know, part of me would like to see it done with just snatch and not squat snatch specifically, because I just want to see what some of our athletes can go ripping it off the floor and power snatching that thing right out of the gate. I think that would make for even a more exciting race, but there's a beauty and an elegance tied into the squat snatch. There's an athleticism and an accuracy component, a balance component that are intensified with the squat snatch. And I've always appreciated that about the movement. I got long arms and long femurs, folks. I got a short torso. It's not up there on my like favorite list of things to do along with the front squat and overhead squat. But I'm going to tell you that in our space, in our sport, the squat snatch is one of the best measures for someone's overall fitness and potential. You hand someone a barbell when they walk into the affiliate and you say, you show them a squat snatch and you say, show me your best one. And if they have the ability to find an overhead squat soundly, if they have an ability to execute the proper timing to pull under that bar into a squat and receive it, their potential is really high, because we tend to be barbell centric. We tend to be fixated on frontally loading the body and living up and down in the frontal plane. So I say this and I digress to say that in most of our semis, the top three athletes are going to be hard to beat in this particular test overall. And here's why. I already mentioned the skill and the accuracy component that's tied into the squat snatch. Then, of course, there's a strength component that starts to be tied in towards the latter part. So they got to be strong enough. But then more importantly, there's a residual fatigue building aspect that starts to trump some of even the stronger athletes. Yes, from a percentage perspective, 185, 205, 225, 245, and 265 are lighter for someone with a 315 snatch than someone with a 285 snatch. But also because of the fatigue that builds throughout the course of this and how they respond and what their aerobic base looks like, it could affect them differently. So I really like this for the top 3 to 5 athletes in every semi to take one of those top 3 to 5 spots in this particular workout. Yes, will there be some outliers and the strongest dude and strongest female just come through and knock it out of the park? No doubt. But for the most part, this is a well-rounded strength test, and that's why I like it. It's got that CrossFit flavor, that OG flavor where it's like, hey, you can show us that you're strong, but you're going to show us on the tail end of this test where we've already built some residual fatigue, and now you got to show us your stuff. But that sets up this final test number 6, okay? For time, 30 calorie echo bike, 15 muscle ups, and 72 foot dumbbell walking lunge. 100 pounds in each hand for the men, 70 pounds in each hand for the women. Now, the 30 cal on the echo bike is the same. I'd be cool if this was 24 for the women. That's just my own take on programming. You know, men typically come in a little bit heavier and a little bit taller, so why not give them that advantage on the erg? I feel the same way about the row, but that's indifferent. You can't go slow here, folks, and you got to go unbroken, right? On the men's side, everybody's going unbroken, and you better be. And on the women's side, not everybody's going unbroken, but the big dogs are. The big dogs are, and they're going to flex on you at the end of this. A lot of them are going to know their tickets punched at the end. Some of them are going to be reckless and put on a show. Some of them are going to be more conservative and kind of play the field and just handle business so they can go to the CrossFit Games. But we don't have a lot of detail on these dumbbells. We've seen people practicing all kinds of different variations. I'm going to assume that's just a regular old lunge. That means like farmer style dumbbell carrying hands at your sides, and it's going to be a thorough test nonetheless. 72 feet coming off that bike with the ring muscle ups. So I love this test. I think it's exciting. This is that sprint style to finish that we often look forward to. There's a 6-minute cap on this. It's not going to be very, very needed at all on the men's side, and some females will get capped for sure, especially those that struggle with ring muscle ups. But I'll tell you, you know, at the end of a long weekend where you've already accumulated 14 legless rope climbs, 100 toes to bar, you've done a lot of squat snatches, you've walked on your hands, you know, you've run the gamut on testing the body, the grip specifically, and that could even play a factor in the dumbbell lunge to finish. It's connection issue, but I'm back. But I think that's where the excitement comes. I think that the excitement is based around, you know, you understanding that the intensity for the athletes builds as the weekend goes. And it also is going to be one that, you know, it adds to the challenge and the excitement of the viewership because of the fact that we still have 300 points on the board. So hopefully, this live is still picking up. I know that I was having a little bit of a connection problem just a minute ago, but I think it should be. I'm going to reload this. All right. So hopefully we're back. Either way, I'm going to wrap this thing up by letting you guys know that I have my picks for this week. So based off all the things that we considered, I really like on the men's side, top three. BKG coming in at third off of the test that we have. I think that he is very well rounded. I think that he can have a couple home runs in him, but I think he's going to just consistently be towards the top. At number two, I got Lazar Jukic, who I think has a very good chance to win this thing. I think that he could win this Europe region overall. But number one, this year, and I think there's no better place to really emphasize that or highlight that than to win the Europe, and I think that he's got it in the bag. So on the female side, shaking things up just a little bit, because in my real desire here, my real goal, or not goal, but I guess my initial guesses weren't going to be the way that these top three played out. But at number three on the female side, I got Emma Tall. I think that this is going to be a great program for her. I think the one test that could hold her up are the legless rope climbs. So I think that she is going to run well. I think she's going to lift well. I think that she's going to suffer well. I'm anxious to see how the 15 ring muscle ups play for her in the final test. And I'm anxious to see how the 14 legless rope climbs play. But those aren't things that she's going to terribly fail at necessarily, but I think that they are things that she will need to navigate. But I think that her fitness is in a position and the tests are in a position that will allow her to fight for a spot on the podium. Number two, Laura Horvath. Yeah, I don't have her winning, although she's more than capable. She's the fittest woman, defending fittest woman. based off of things that I've seen throughout the course of the year in testing. And Laura also being very sensitive and aware that like she wants what she wants at the CrossFit Games. She doesn't necessarily feel like or need to win the semifinal. I don't know that, but I'm just telling you from what we've seen historically and what I think that she leans into in regards to as a competitor, she's going to be ready for her biggest show of the year at the CrossFit Games. So she's just going to handle business and do her thing. And then number one, Gabby Magawa. And I think that she will physically show up ready. She showed us in quarterfinals that she is well-rounded and ready to rock and roll. In fact, I watched that documentary or a vlog on her. I mean, she came back and hit that workout two in the same day and improved the time. Like that's just, and she did it because she was concerned about the validity of her score because of the way that it was being judged. So nonetheless, there are different things about this that are very intriguing in regards to a storyline. There are many amazing women in Europe that are going to throw down today. I didn't put much time or effort into Africa because I don't know a ton about them. So my apologies to the community out there for not including you guys in on this, but this is just to my little old personal account. I'm just trying to get some good reps in and basically talk about the programming before I get an opportunity to go do it over the next 2 weeks. But team, if you watch this, I appreciate you. My connection was spotty. I had to enter and exit a couple times, so I know that lost a lot of the engagement, unfortunately. But I'm going to try to kick up and do a little bit of live action here on Instagram to see what it's like and to see what kind of traction we can get throughout the course of the season. So thanks for joining me. I'm excited to watch my man Chase Ingram kick it off. The semifinal kickoff show starts tonight if you're in the States. So don't miss out on it. Watch him cover the events. He's going to have a lot of guests pop in and out. It's going to be a fun, chill atmosphere. But at least we're going to have something to watch and something to hear to help us stay in the loop of what's going on. And then full coverage Saturday and Sunday is what you can look forward to. And a similar for North America West with me. And then also the same thing in North America East with your boy. So reach out to me, send me a DM. Who should we have on the show? I'm trying to come up with a good list. We've reached out to some people that are going to be on site and available to join me, in California and also, in Tennessee. So let me know who you want to see. Reach out, shoot me a DM, and have a great weekend. It is here, folks. This is it. This is it now. Semifinals. This is the time that all of us have been waiting for at least for me personally. We do all the complaining. We do all the buildup for the online competition, the judging this, the judging that, the fields are set, and we got live competition in front of us. I can't wait. See you guys on the other side.